Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Federal Drug Labeling Edition. Today our featured guest is appellate litigator Aaron Glenn Busby, discussing Wyeth v. Levine heard an oral argument on Monday, November 3rd. Thanks for tuning in. The Supreme Court here considers state tort claims based on inadequate prescription drug labeling. The case concerns Diana Levine, a Vermont musician who went into a clinic for headache-related nausea and ended up having her arm amputated. The amputation was a consequence of complications arising from the administration of the antihistamine drug Phenergen by the IV push method. The FDA-approved labeling for Phenergen did not prohibit IV push delivery, but did warn against it, precisely because of the possibility of such complications. So Levine brought a negligence claim against the drug's manufacturer, Wyeth, in state court, arguing that the drug's labeling was inadequate for not prohibiting IV push delivery. Wyeth argued that such a claim was preempted by federal law, but the jurors, having considered the FDA's approval of the drug's label, ruled in Levine's favor to the tune of more than $6 million. The Vermont Supreme Court upheld the ruling, and now the United States Supreme Court considers whether prescription drug labeling judgments approved by the FDA preempt state tort claims that these labels were insufficient to make the drugs reasonably safe for use. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Busby.
Hello, I'm Aaron Glenn Busby, and I'll be discussing the case of Wyeth v. Levine, which was argued in the Supreme Court on November 3, 2008. Arguing for Wyeth was Seth Waxman. He split his time with Edwin Needler of the Solicitor General's Office, arguing for the United States as amicus curiae. David Frederick argued for the petitioner, Diana Levine. This case raises some interesting questions about the extent to which regulation by federal agencies preempts state tort law. This case began when Levine, a musician, went to a clinic to be treated for a migraine. A physician's assistant administered a pain medication and an anti-nausea drug manufactured by Wyeth called Phenergen, via IV push. The Phenergen was accidentally injected into an artery, which caused such severe damage to the artery that gangrene set in, and eventually Levine's hand and forearm were amputated. Levine sued Wyeth, alleging that it failed to adequately warn of the dangers of administering Phenergen through IV push, as opposed to either intramuscular injection or in an IV drip. At trial, the court told jurors that they could consider the FDA's approval of the label in use when Levine was injured, but that FDA approval did not establish that the warning was adequate or prevent Wyeth from adding to the warning. The jury awarded Levine over $7 million in damages. The Vermont courts rejected Wyeth's arguments that Levine's claim should have been preempted by federal law. In the Supreme Court, Wyeth argued, first, that it would have been impossible for it to comply with FDA labeling requirements and also change its labeling to contraindicate the administration of Phenergen via IV push, which would have been required to avoid state tort liability. Second, they argued that Levine's state tort claims should be preempted under so-called obstacle preemption, because allowing the claims would present an obstacle to Congress's intent that it be the FDA that make judgments about risks and benefits of regulated drugs, rather than state courts. Levine countered that Wyeth could, in fact, under a regulation referred to as the Changes Being Affected regulation, have added to the warning approved by the FDA. Thus, it would not have been impossible for it to comply with both federal and state law. With respect to obstacle preemption, Levine argued that FDA regulation and state law tort claims have in fact been complementary, not conflicting, and that the FDA's claim that its actions preempt state failure to warn claims is a recent policy change by the agency. In this case, Levine argues, there was no evidence that the FDA considered the specific risk at issue, gangrene resulting from the use of IV push as opposed to a regular IV drip, and therefore there was no FDA balancing of risk and benefit being contradicted by the state tort judgment. At argument, there were two essentially factual issues to which the justices returned several times. First, whether the FDA had actually considered the risks associated with administering Phenergen by IV push, and second, whether Wyeth had evidence that would have allowed it to change the warning without FDA approval under the Changes Being Affected regulation. Justice Ginsburg was first to bring up the issue of whether the FDA had considered the risks of IV push administration. Seth Waxman pointed to four places in the labeling that refer to things like the rate of administration that would only be relevant to IV push. Both Justices Ginsburg and Alito asked, basically, how in the world could the FDA have considered the risks and still approve the use of IV push for this drug, balancing the risk of gangrene against an anti-nausea medication. Justice Kennedy pushed Edwin Kneedler on the issue, asking if he agreed that the FDA had considered the risk of IV push. Kneedler said he did. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Scalia took up the issue with David Frederick, who argued that there was no evidence in any of the correspondence between the FDA and Wyeth that the FDA was considering the particular risks of IV push administration. The Chief and Justice Scalia responded that if the FDA approved a label countenancing the use of IV push, as it clearly had, it must have considered the risks of that procedure. Justice Souter was the first to ask whether Wyeth could in fact have changed the warning on its own, and Justices Scalia and Breyer pursued the issue in their questioning of Kneedler. Kneedler argued that only new information about a risk that's greater in severity or frequency than had been previously seen could justify changing a label under the changes being affected regulation. This issue apparently was never discussed below. Justice Breyer suggested that if it were really the case that new information were necessary to permit a drug manufacturer to add a warning, it would have been the defendant's burden to show that there was not new information. That's because the defendant is arguing for preemption as a defense. And in this case, the defendant failed to carry this burden. Breyer returned to the issue during Frederick's argument, at which point Justice Kennedy pointed out that some state laws give a rebuttable presumption to defendants whose labels complied with the FDA. But none of the other justices seemed particularly interested in the burden of proof issue. Justices Scalia and Souter returned to the issue of new information during Frederick's argument, with Frederick arguing that either new information or new analysis of information would allow the manufacturer to change a label. In response to a question from Justice Alito, Frederick conceded that if the FDA had considered the risks of IV push and concluded that it should not be contraindicated and no further information had arisen, Levine's claim would have been preempted. Justice Scalia argued that if manufacturers can change warnings as easily as described by Frederick, they would just add a warning every time they faced a jury verdict on some new risk, leading the FDA to have an enormous job considering all of these label changes. Frederick countered this argument with an assertion that this process would actually promote public safety, because it would provide doctors with more information in the warnings. But Scalia said that this would throw out the idea that we should be balancing risks and benefits, and that in fact it could eliminate drugs for patients who really need them. Justice Stevens asked Frederick what distinguished this case from a case such as the one in Justice Alito's hypothetical, where there would be preemption. Frederick answered that here the FDA had not specifically considered the risk of IV push versus IV administration in general. The Chief Justice followed up on this, saying, if we think the FDA considered specifically IV push risks as opposed to general arterial exposure, then you lose. And if we determine that they did not, then they lose. Frederick agreed with this summary. There were a few other points brought up at argument. Early in the argument, Chief Justice Roberts brought up the fact that, unlike the statute regulating medical devices that the court considered last term in Regal versus Medtronic to find preemption, the statute regulating drugs does not contain an express preemption clause. Waxman argued that the absence of an express preemption clause shouldn't affect the conflict preemption analysis, and none of the other justices seemed interested in taking up the issue. Justice Ginsburg raised the FDA's alleged change of position on preemption of state law, but Kneedler answered only that the FDA has never taken the position that manufacturers can change a label without new information. He also stated that the FDA is not arguing for a blanket preemption of state law. But none of the other justices seemed interested in following up on whether the FDA has truly made a policy change on preemption here. One further issue I'd like to mention that was not raised at argument, but was discussed extensively in a number of amicus briefs, is whether there should be a presumption against finding preemption of state law. A number of amici on petitioner's side argued that a presumption against preemption is inconsistent with the original understanding of the Supremacy Clause, or at least should not apply to conflict preemption. On the other side, Anarchy, including a brief I co-authored for a group of constitutional and administrative law scholars, argued that the presumption against preemption, that is, requiring clear congressional intent to preempt state law, serves as an important safeguard for state autonomy in a world with so few constitutional limits on federal power. While there are few constitutional limits on federal preemption of state law, requiring clear congressional intent provides a political check by requiring states' representatives to be involved, and a procedural check by requiring state-displacing choices to overcome the Constitution's built-in hurdles to legislative action. It's an issue of federalism that has not received a lot of popular attention, so it would be interesting if the justices took it up here. But judging from the argument, we may have to wait until another case.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.